Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Yes, March Madness is upon us, and you know, you might enjoy the occasional gambling pool, and maybe that's not a problem for you. Over 80% of American adults gamble on a yearly basis. 3 to 5 gamblers out of every 100 struggles with a gambling problem. That's a lot of problems. And with us to talk about this issue is the great Lester Munson. He has been a lawyer for 57 years, having graduated from University of Chicago. And he, you probably know him as the Sports Illustrated journalist, writing for 13 years and then joining ESPN for 16 years. He's the chair of the Board of Trustees of the National Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation, and he is an advocate of this cause that we're going to be talking about today. Welcome, Lester. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Karen. It's a real I'm grateful that I can talk about this issue on your show. Thank you.
You know, there was a Tribune article about this, and I think it's just something that we think about addiction, and we understand alcohol, and we understand drugs, and we understand eating, and we understand all of these addictions, but some people just poo-poo this gambling thing. And I want to really give people some facts here. And, you know, Lester, what kind of statistics can you give our listeners to kind of put this in perspective as to what kind of problems are arising because of this?
This entire sports gambling industry exploded in 2018, when the United States Supreme Court made a decision. Everybody saw the decision coming. Large companies were instantly in the business of taking bets. Instead of betting in the shadows on sports, all of a sudden we could bet on our phones. And during the course of this year, the total amount of money spent on sports gambling will be in excess of $250 billion.
Oh my gosh.
That is an increase of 78% since 2021, when people started keeping track of this. And there are other experts who think it could be more than the $250 billion. I'll give you one example. We just had the Super Bowl several weeks ago. 31 million people bet on the Super Bowl online, and they bet a total of $7.6 billion. That was on a single Sunday afternoon. That's the kind of money we're talking about.
And you might say, okay, but that's lost. I mean, people lose when they gamble. I mean, the people who win in gambling are the people what I'm saying is this is money being thrown out the window for most people.
Absolutely. The problem is that among all the sports bettors who are producing these enormous sums of money, 70% of the bets are made by only 4% of the bettors. That's where the problem arises. That 4%, those are the people who are vulnerable to a compulsive gambling disorder. It's a recognized medical condition. It's in the DMV, and everybody understands it's a condition, but now all of a sudden, we could be facing an epidemic of these problems.
And as I understand it, and I just actually listened to a psychologist talk about it on a podcast this weekend in preparation for my show here, and it affects the brain the exact same way that opioids do. Exact same thing, except there's no drug, it's the gambling. So it's almost like we are dealing with the opioid crisis and we're dealing with all these different addictions, but we're actually not only discouraging this addiction, we are actually having governmental agencies and big industries support it and make
Absolutely.
Money from it.
The governments are partners in some of these gambling operations. It began with lotteries. Now governments, public universities, private universities are setting up gambling programs for people who are vulnerable, who could easily become addicted.
You told me some statistics about putting this whole thing in perspective when it comes to professional and college sports. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the magnitude of what we're talking about?
Here in this country, we are the only culture anywhere in the world who stage enormous spectacles of sports events in our institutions of higher education. You don't see giant crowds watching sports at Oxford or Cambridge or the Sorbonne. We are the only culture that does that. The scale of these activities is breathtaking. University of Michigan, one of the great universities in this country, maybe the greatest of our public universities. On a Saturday afternoon in the fall, 120,000 people gather in their stadium to watch a football game. This is a stadium in which they've spent more than $1 billion building it. It has 24 elevators to get people up into the upper reaches of the stadium. That's just an indication of the magnitude of college sports. Professional sports, we have 120 sports teams in the four major sports. Each one of those teams is worth between $2 billion and $12 billion. So you can see the size, the magnitude of this industry. There are people, sports economists, people may not know this, there are economists who study only sports. And they have concluded that American sports industry in a single year is approaching $100 billion. It's absolutely mind-blowing.
You know, let's focus this a little bit. So I have a son who graduated from college a couple of years ago. Then he went to grad school. Starting in college, he and his friends, because of the prevalence of online betting on their phones, that's just what they do. That's just what they do. And, you know, they make it into like an intellectual exercise to come up with a crazy parlay or something. But it's become so commonplace. I don't think it's just my son and his friends. I think college age boys in particular maybe are really, really into this. Do you find that as well?
Absolutely correct. The target audience for these large gambling companies is young men 22 to 40. They deliberately skew their ads to go after those guys. They know they will spend hour after hour making bet after bet. And the ads are designed to attract young men. Karen and I could watch these ads and it wouldn't faze us. But a guy like your son, he's the target because that's where the companies can do so well. And they continue to exploit this without any regulation or anybody stopping them from doing anything.
And let's, you know, we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, let's continue this conversation. We're here with Lester Munson. We're talking about sports gambling, and we've got some calls and some texts that I want to get to. But you're listening to WGN AM 720. Pete Rose has a song.
I've never heard it before.
You know, when all of you are relaxing and, you know, just doing stuff on the weekend, I'm surfing the internet trying to find songs that will fit my segments.
I thought that was your producer.
Jack's not going to take credit for that, but that Pete Rose does have a song, and that was it. And we're going to be talking about Pete Rose in a minute, because I have to have Lester Munson weigh in on whether or not he's going to go into the Hall of Fame, whether or not he should go in the Hall of Fame, and it's on the topic of betting, because that was his downfall. But let's go back to talking about this. When we were off the air, Lester, you were talking about how when you watch a game, a college game, you hear cheers in a different way. Tell our listeners, this is just astounding.
If you're at a college football game or a college basketball game, late in the game, the crowd will erupt in cheers, and as a fan, you will have no idea why they are cheering, and the cheering will continue. And then if you ask somebody sitting near you, they will tell you somebody just beat the point spread. They are cheering for their bets. They are not cheering for their teams. That is the way things are now in college sports. And this is everywhere where there are large crowds. We're not talking about, you know, the Loyola basketball team. We're talking about Oklahoma, Nebraska, Ohio State, Notre Dame, and so on.
So, Lester, we've talked about the magnitude of this betting. And, you know, it's hard to then turn and say, well, what are the disasters that result? And, you know, as a lawyer, I've represented people who have embezzled money. Why did they embezzle money? Because they were gambling at night and they were going to their bank and they were gambling during the day by taking money and, you know, trying to make back the money so they could pay their mortgage and their kids' college because they basically are wasting their entire savings accounts. I had a case where a guy was retired, had a nice little nest egg, $650,000 in a couple years he just wasted on scratch-off tickets. He and his wife couldn't retire. They had nothing. They, you know, they were impoverished. So what I'm saying is, how do we quantify the disasters that occur here?
The expectation is that of 100 bettors in this target audience, men 22 to 40, three or four of them are going to be vulnerable to an addiction to gambling. In the state of Illinois, the Department of Public Health made a study, and they figured that here in our state, there's 100 million people who either have a gambling problem and are struggling with it or are on the edge of struggling with it. So it's more common than you might imagine.
So, you know, and again, we're talking about sports betting, but, you know, we have to expand it a little bit for this question. But, you know, we're building a casino now, you know, on the west side, some big casino. It's going to have all kinds of whistles and bells and a hotel, I think, and a venue and all of that. Does actually building more casinos, does that increase the gambling problems, or is gambling so prevalent now everywhere you go that it's not even going to make a difference?
Casinos have always had a room for sports betting. You could go into that room and see 11 games on TV screens and make bets. That's always been the way. Now, the sports betting facility in a casino is three times the size it used to be. And at stadiums, Wrigley Field, I am a Cub fan, my favorite place, there is now a 17,000-square-foot sports gambling room that is right alongside the ballpark on Addison Street. The Cubs built that because they knew they could draw in fans to make bets and they could make money from the bets.
So, I mean, I assume that people are going bankrupt. I assume that people are getting divorced. I assume that people are killing themselves. I assume there are all kinds of problems that are tied to this kind of addiction, as it happens with drug addiction and other things. But is anybody trying to quantify that?
There are now, for the first time in the last 2 years, peer-reviewed studies who are studying bankruptcy, divorce, domestic violence, and other social behavior that results from gambling. What they do is they find a state that recently legalized sports gambling, and they compare the bankruptcies and the domestic violence after sports gambling to before, and they see that there is an increase in both. There are studies at UCLA, at Northwestern, and at University of Southern California who have documented this.
You know, I want to focus this on the employment law aspect of this for a minute. So under the Americans with Disabilities Act, gambling addiction does not qualify as a disability. It's not a protected category, unlike alcoholism, drug addiction, etc., despite the fact that the American Psychological Association, which you mentioned earlier, with their DSM, which talks about quote-unquote disorders, they have now categorized gambling as a disorder. So in your mind, what's the difference? I mean, do you think we'll just come around to the fact that, you know, under the ADA, gambling will be a disorder? Because I have had clients, as Karen mentioned, who had gambling and drug addiction. The drug addiction was protected. He was in a protected category because he stopped and went in treatment, but the gambling wasn't. He had no legal protection in the employment law sense. What's the difference?
The difference is we just haven't caught on to the fact that this is a serious disease. It will have to be categorized under the ADA. That'll happen either by some form of legislation or by litigation. You know it's going to happen. And the DSM has had a gambling disorder in the fifth edition, I think in the previous edition. So it's well established among medical practitioners that this is a disease. And there is treatment. 12-step programs work. There's a place here in Oak Park, in Maywood, way back in, that treats a gambling disorder. They do a good job. There are places to go when you have this problem.
It's interesting, Karen, because just like drugs or alcohol, if you're not using but you're in a treatment program, you're protected under federal or state law from discrimination, retaliation, etc. Gambling, which we now, you know, a lot of psychologists and think about it the same way, it's the same sort of addiction, does not have those same protections.
Well, I think, and this is maybe my simple mind making it more simple, that people understand addiction to things of that you put in your body. The smoking, you know, everyone understands the addiction. Even if you've never smoked a cigarette, you see the people outside and you see how addicted they are. You don't understand. A lot of people do not understand what is the thrill of losing money when you sit at your computer at midnight betting on, you know, games. I mean, who wants to do that? I don't want to do that. And if I lose $1, I'm mad.
But it's an addiction, though.
Well, but yeah, I know. But people, I think it's harder to understand because you're not putting something in your body.
When you look at the history of tobacco and opioids, you see exactly what we are now seeing, particularly in sports gambling. It is an addiction. It starts in a certain way, and then it grows, and it grows, and it becomes a serious problem. And the ads that are exploiting particularly these young men are the kind of ads tobacco and opioids used to establish themselves within the economy. So the problem is regulation and litigation haven't caught up the way they have in tobacco and opioids.
You know what? Can you stay for another segment with us, Lester? We've got some good texts and some calls here. And I want to also talk about how do you recognize a problem in a loved one? What do you do? And how are these addictions treated? Just before we take a break, we've just got about a minute here. First of all, Mr. Munson was my little league coach for a year in Winfield. Good to hear him. That's nice. 630 area code. We have a texter from 847 who says, sports gambling is still not legal in California, Texas, Florida, Georgia. When that's correct, Lester, is it?
Absolutely.
And so what is the reluctance? I'm just curious. Why these states have kind of been reticent to pass these laws or allow these companies to come in.
There are groups who are interested in bringing sports gambling under control. California was to have a referendum. I don't think it's occurred yet. There's a campaign going on. And in these other states where there are referendums, there's a chance it might not become legal. There have always been anti-gambling advocacy groups. They are now getting in gear on this issue.
Let's take a break. I'm going to give out the phone numbers here because this is a topic that I think people are very interested in. And like I said, we're going to be talking a little bit about the how-tos and if you see somebody and what do you do. 312-981-7200. You can text to that same number, 312-981-7200. I'm here today with my law partner, Patrick Dolan, who is weighing in on this. And we're here with the great Lester Munson. He has been a lawyer for 57 years, and he was a writer for Sports Illustrated, and he joined ESPN for 16 years, and he is the chair, the board of trustees of the National Hazel and Betty Ford Foundation. We're talking about online gambling, and if you have anything, again, I'm going to give out the numbers here, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And after we talk to Lester a little bit, we're going to open up the phone lines for any questions at all that you have legally or otherwise. I'm going to give out my email address in case someone wants to address me in private, and that is wgn@askkarenconti.com. You're listening to WGN. We're talking to Lester Munson. He's a sports writer, and he is an anti-sports betting person, and we're talking about some of the problems here that have arisen because of online gambling. I want to get right to it. Lester, and we're here with Patrick Dolan, my law partner and the employment lawyer, and let's talk about the stages of gambling. You kind of have a way that you like to look at it. What are those stages?
If you look at the history of a compulsive gambler, there are four stages: debt, denial, desperation, and delusion. They go into debt. They refuse to admit it. They think that they can chase their debts, make a bet, and capture everything back. Then they become desperate, probably stealing money from the family or from the business. and ultimately they become delusional. And that, in the case of Pete Rose, the most famous problem gambler perhaps of all time, he at the end was delusional to the point where he did not think he had to pay his losing bets. He thought he could just keep betting, and if he lost, he didn't owe the bookie the money. That led to his downfall. The bookies reported him, and he was banned from baseball.
It could have been worse for him. It could have been not being banned from baseball. It was probably
I think he was too famous. Otherwise, something else would have happened.
Absolutely. Right. I've got a texter from 847 who says, I know people who are addicted to alcohol and drugs, and they have a tendency to be addictive in other areas. Is that the case when it comes to gambling? Do people have what they call comorbidities, or is that a thing when it comes to sports gambling?
There are certainly episodes of people who are recovering from drugs and from alcohol who then drift into gambling. That's not a large number of people, but there are documented cases of that. There is a guy who's making speeches around the country, a lawyer from Detroit, who went in that exact cycle. He's got a powerful story, but I think he's a very rare thing.
Now, I have a texter who said, I convinced that sports gambling will be the end of some sports. How do you trust the wins? Will that, you know, impact the integrity of sports if so much money is being wagered?
Terrific question. For a long time, all sports pushed gambling away because they were afraid it would corrupt the outcome. People would try to manage the outcome of the game to win a bet. We have many cases of that. The Black Sox here in Chicago are the ultimate example of all of that. And there is no question that it's a problem. We've already had a dozen or so athletes who have been banned because of gambling since the Supreme Court case was decided in 2018. There will be more of those. Most athletes now are making so much money that they can afford their losses. But then, at a certain point, they make a bet, they can't pay, and then that's when the trouble starts on the integrity of the game.
Give us a call here if you have a question for Lester, 312-981-7200. Can individuals, said my 847 area code, can individuals be involuntarily committed for gambling addiction treatment under mental health law?
Now, there's a question. That's a good question. I don't know. I think you can be committed in this state for 3 days, but I'm not sure gambling is enough.
Yeah, I don't think so. It would have to be something where you're of harm to yourself or to others, and it would have to be pretty substantial. Yeah. Maybe monetary losses would not rise to that level under our laws. That would be my guess and the answer to that. Let's go back to Pete Rose. You know, the great Pete Rose was the all-time hit king, and he was Charlie Hustle and all of that. And he was banned from the Hall of Fame, and now there's talk that he might be allowed back in. There's talk that President Trump is going to pardon him. First of all, from a legal standpoint, if President Trump pardons him, will that have any impact on the Hall of Fame?
That will have absolutely no impact on the Hall of Fame. Interestingly, however, Pete Rose was banned for life. So legalistically, he is now eligible for the Hall of Fame. That doesn't mean he's going to go in. He would still have to be voted in. But in a technical legal way, he is now eligible. I think there's a huge number of people out there who don't want baseball people, who don't want him going into the Hall of Fame. The commissioner who banned him from baseball for life was Bartlett Giamatti. He was the former president of Yale, a brilliant man, a Renaissance literature scholar. And he made the point that if we're going to protect the integrity of our game, we must protect the integrity of our process, and therefore he will be banned, and he will be banned for life. And I think a lot of people have been disappointed in Rose as he has continued through life, and many are not going to vote him in, even though I think he's technically now eligible.
he didn't have a whole lot of remorse. He didn't show a whole lot of remorse.
Not in the least. He flaunted the whole situation.
Yeah. And, you know, the truth of the matter is he could have had a gambling addiction. He probably did, right? And we could have maybe felt a little empathy for him, and maybe, you know, he had the climate been a little different back then, and had he been a little bit more forthcoming with what was going on and a little remorse, maybe he would have been treated differently.
He could have been suspended, gone into rehab, come out and, 12 steps and all that, and it never happened. He was betting 4 and 5 baseball games each night, $2,000 or $5,000 on each game. And people who support him like to say he never bet against his team. That is not true. He bet against his team in 3 games in San Diego. The investigator that Major League Baseball had, John Dowd, dug up all this information, and he finally disclosed it at a group of baseball analytics people. These are guys who study numbers all day on baseball. There's a whole flock of them out there. And he explained that he had bet against the Reds, his own team. He was the manager of the team. He bet against them 3 times. And Dowd documented that, but he didn't document it to the point where he thought he could put it in his report.
Was there any fact at all ever that Pete Rose did something to not win, to impact the outcome, to make his bets successful?
If he's the manager of the team, it's almost inconceivable, if he is bet to lose, that he wouldn't do something. He could pick the next pitcher from his staff to come in and could pick the worst of his staff and not the one who could win the game.
And how do you prove that?
And how do you ever, you can't unravel that.
Almost impossible.
Cannot unravel that. Let's continue with Lester Munson here. We're getting a lot of interesting texts and calls. 312-981-7200. We're here with Patrick Dolan, who is my law partner, and Lester Munson. And we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back. Here with my law partner, seeing him on Sunday. Now I got to face you on Monday.
You're so lucky. Don't sigh. You're really happy about it.
Anyway, I know you wanted to come and talk to Lester about sports. All you men are the same. You just all want to get together and talk about sports.
Is there something wrong with that, Karen?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
You know, I always say that people, when women get together, they talk about feelings. How's your mother feeling? How is your... And men talk about 2 things. They talk about sports, and they talk about the directions they took to get to the place.
Yeah.
Isn't it true? It's a way of not really dealing with feelings.
You make it sound so simple-minded, Karen. Sports are a very intricate thing.
Okay, so Lester, we're talking about sports gambling. We're talking about addictions. We've got a lot of interesting callers, but a couple of our texters were talking about how these particular companies will give young people free money. How does it work, and how does that help with the addiction?
These large sports gambling companies have expert marketing people. They provide all sorts of benefits, even occasionally cash money for somebody to get started. If you listen to the ads, you'll get the idea that by calling the number or by getting online, you're going to get $200, and you will be guaranteed that some point one of your bets is going to win. And then at the same time, they tell you to bet a parlay, 3 different things at once, which is the greatest sucker bet of all time, guaranteed for the company to make money. But I'll give you one example. The Wall Street Journal had a wonderful story about a woman with a gambling addiction. She was betting on sports and on other things. She's a psychiatrist, board-certified psychiatrist. She lost $400,000. She called the sports betting company where she was making her bets and said, I think I have a problem. I can't go on with this. I'm going to stop betting. They sent her $1,000 so she could continue her betting.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like throwing kerosene on the fire.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like handing open alcohol to somebody who is on the street. But that's the kind of things they do.
I know, Lester, I know we hear stories occasionally, more recently, about college athletes who get in trouble or their coaches who get in trouble. But focusing on the athletes, you know, because of the name, image, likeness, the NIL money that is now flowing to some of these college athletes in millions of dollars. I mean, a lot of money to young 18, 20, 22-year-old athletes, male and female, frankly. Do you think that is going to lead to an increased abuse of online betting? Because you already told us that young folks tend to abuse this more than others. Seems like the perfect storm.
It certainly does. Name, image, and likeness money is something new. It's the result of antitrust cases that were tried and won by various athletes across the country, particularly in Oakland, California. Caitlin Clark, for example, the great basketball player, in her final year at University of Iowa, collected $6 million in name, image, and likeness money that we know of. It could have been more. It wasn't, certainly wasn't any less. The quarterback of the Oregon football team that had such a great season collected $12 million in NIL money. And it's difficult to figure out how that is going to work. I think what might happen is the lesser players, the players who are not getting that kind of money, that's only for the big stars, Caitlin right. Clark. Those players, out of envy, out of some sort of jealousy, they may be more prone to making bets or trying to make money with a sports bookie by doing something in the game. The people who are making the big money, I cannot imagine that they would be getting into this kind of activity.
I would hope not.
Is there a correlation between people who are competitive and people who gamble? And the reason I ask this is because maybe it's just focused on athletes, but when you do hear of an athlete who's betting and doing these kind of things, you just wonder if that's part of that competition where you're always got the adrenaline going, you're vying for the best, and then you just get out of your sport perhaps and you translate that into betting. Is there some idea?
I think the likelihood is that the number of people with gambling problems among elite athletes is the same percentage among the normal population.
Okay.
We have no indication that there would be more among these ultra-competitive people, as you describe them, Karen. I did a long study of this, domestic violence among athletes when I was working. Same percentage of violence that you saw in the normal population. So I think it would be the same thing here.
So what are the signs that someone is addicted? You know, like I said, you know, you go to the gambling casino, you and I could go maybe once every 6 months and go have a drink and play a poker machine for $5 and you're done. But there's some people who can't do that. So how do you know that someone goes from that social gambling, paying the once in a while lottery ticket to an addiction?
There are warning signs that you can see. The gambler loses interest in other things. Instead of reading, instead of doing some other activity that they have, they're spending all their time on gambling. They start to miss work. They miss family events, or they show up late. And they will ultimately get in financial difficulties, which they will try to cover up. But ordinarily, that will be the breaking point. If you are betting online with a credit card, those bets go to a cash advance on the credit card. That's 33% interest. And so that is the way most families figure out something is going wrong. The big problem is once they start to lose, they chase their losses. They think that with one brilliant bet, they can get even or even make a profit. That's where things go completely wrong. And somebody in this category is also spending more time on gambling than any other form of entertainment. And that's something you might be able to notice.
Patrick, did you have a question? I was just I was thinking that you know, you see these people. Let me just look at this. Look at the percentage of young people addicted to gambling. It's a small percentage of all ages. Are you seeing more people? Lester, you were talking about college age kids who are getting online. They're being given money and they're, you know, spending money doing this. What do you do when you're a parent and you see your son, like you were talking about, Patrick, your son doing this, and do you like pull it away from him? With marijuana, you say you can't smoke in the house, you can't do this, you can't smoke. If you want to do it when you're emancipated, you can.
I'm going to get in big trouble now.
Yeah, but you know, what do you say to your children? Like, you know, you're a person who is a wise person. What would you say to your son? So you let him do it? You tell him, or do they give him some information about why he shouldn't be doing it?
It's the most difficult thing a parent can face. There's no question about it. There will be some lying. There will be denial. There's a phenomenon called codependency in which the parents are linked to the problem. It can be very, very complicated. The best thing that I know of to do would be to organize what's called an intervention, an actual meeting with the son, whoever it is that's the problem, getting everybody who loves him, who knows him around and say, here is what you're doing, and maybe cause a crisis in that person's life and push them into rehab or into treatment. But it's a really difficult problem for a family.
I would imagine, because gambling is everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, you can be sitting on your couch in the middle of the night and there's nothing that's going to prevent you from, you know, logging on. Are there any lawsuits, to your knowledge? I mean, we have seen over the years all of these lawsuits that were brought against the tobacco industry, for instance, and even the attorneys general kind of ganged up on the cigarette companies, saying, "Hey, listen, we're paying all this money for health care for people who are dying of lung cancer. We want our money back because you're advertising and enticing people to be addicted." Have there been lawsuits?
There is at least three class action cases pending on this kind of gambling. They're in Boston, and one of the lawyers was in the tobacco cases, so he knows the pathway to follow. These are brand new cases. We have no idea how well they're going to do, how long it will take. We do know that tobacco, the road was 6 or 7 years long before the tobacco industry finally decided to settle and to do something that was of benefit to anybody.
What are those claims in those class action lawsuits?
I have not yet seen. Okay. I'm in touch with the lawyer. He has, and it's filed in state court, and it's not online.
Okay.
So I can't. I don't know the particulars of his claim.
Mm-hmm. With these lawsuits, I think it's always interesting when in the process of these cases you get discovery, which is the exchange of paperwork and documents. And I know in the tobacco industry, even our Walter Jacobson, you know, had some issues with accusing the tobacco companies way back, and he was ahead of his time making those accusations. But as it turns out, we got the documents, and it showed, of course, they were being marketed to young kids.
Right.
Of course that was the whole plan right from the beginning.
Yeah.
And when you are targeting young people to get addictive behaviors because it's going to line your pockets, that to me is consumer fraud, or at least some form of it.
I think it's pretty clear that that's exactly how they're marketing their product, you know, to the young folks. And from I've seen, at least, it's pretty clear.
Yeah.
No, there's no question. It's a complete mismatch. The gambling companies have algorithms, analytics, huge numbers of people keeping track of these developments. And here's a 25-year-old guy who makes a bet thinking he knows more than they do. It's just they have no chance.
We have 15 seconds, and someone says, so how do you help? Can you give me like one bullet point here on what do you do if you're concerned about this? Is it the legislature in Illinois that needs to pass something?
I think the legislature here definitely must pass something. They could eliminate prop bets and parlay bets in a stroke that would make everything better here. I think J.B. Pritzker actually is interested in this. So I would say write to him. Tell him to do something on sports gambling because we know he's already interested.
Thank you so much for joining us. Patrick Dolan, I'll see you tomorrow. If you want to talk to Patrick about a labor or an employment issue, you can always call him at 312-332-7800, or you can email me at wgn@askkarenconti.com, and I promise you I will forward the message. And Lester Munson, always a pleasure. I've known you for years, and I really appreciate you coming on talking about this really important topic.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank
All right.
you.